The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 51 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello, I'm Lindsay Sands and welcome to episode 51 of The Catholics of Oz. So good to have you with us, and I'm really, really happy about today's show because something that hasn't happened this year is finally happening. We have the band back together. So starting with Caroline Knight, my back in the band sister, I guess, Caroline.
I like that one.
Caroline, how are you going today?
I am great, thanks. I'm seeing the sun outside, so it's making me happy.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to invite us outside, and knowing the Aussie autumn, it'll invite us out, and then it will dump a whole lot of rain on us.
Totally will.
That's the go.
100%.
And Lido Sobol, you're here. We're all here. Lido, how are you? How does it feel to be part of the band with the trio again?
We're all back together, guys. The three amigos. I could try to do the dance or whatever is from the movie, but I can't. But I'm sitting down. But we're all back. Thank God. Thank you. Thank you.
And now, so okay, so the court of the Catholics of Oz is now in session. The two of you. We need to investigate what's going on here. I've been posting mentioning a whole lot of different conspiracy theories about the reasons why the two of you have not been on the show at the same time. So I need to know, has there been a fight that's been going on? Did you set up some kind of a roster system? It's like, you do this one, I'll do that one. Is it like, you know, if the three of us get together, it's like crossing the streams, it will cause a, you know, catastrophic kind of...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the one. I like that one the best.
Yeah, so I think it's more of a Generation X style. You know, I think Caroline and everyone who live in Generation X have this sort of mental... thought and go, okay, Callum will be on next time. I can have the day off.
And yes.
Then, yeah.
A bit Callum like work.
A, yeah, like work. Yeah, no, you're
trying to just
day, back,
leave
back
it
forth.
To the other person to do something, just take a day off. Yeah, they'll cover. It's all right. Right.
Fine. I'm sorry. I'm not part of your generation. You guys can have your MTVs and your, you know, and your permed hair and your shoulder pads. That's all right. That's fine with me. Whatever.
Nothing okay. Wrong with some shoulder pads.
Yeah,
or permed hair.
Or permed hair. Yeah, that's true. Sure. That's true. I think I was coming busy as every time there's a week, there's something on, and then when there's nothing on, there's something actually on. We don't know. It just happens every day. Like all of you guys know, something you don't plan it, all of a sudden, bang, something happens. Go, oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, right, no. Well,
in fact, the one after this, I think I'm not able to be on because we're going away. But we'll have to try.
Let's cross that bridge when we come to it.
We'll try and sort that one out. Yeah. Okay, you'll be at Plino.
Oh yeah, I think I will be. I should be. Yeah. I don't think we've got anything next week, do we? Where's the calendar? Nothing's going to notify me anything on the calendar. No,
it's all right.
No? Okay, nope. All good. All good.
Let's just check our calendars on the podcast. Yeah. Right now.
So the next one is on the 20th of March. We don't
the
have
inner
anything.
Work.
What? Oh no, when is Anzac Day? Only kidding. Only kidding.
We're good. We're
only
good. That's far away.
Anyway, content.
All right, so before we continue, just a reminder to all of you that if you love all this banter, like the Catholics of Oz on SQPN's Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Please like any posts about us on Twitter and share as well. You can find those on at SQPN on Twitter. If you're listening to the Catholics of Oz as a new subscriber, or if you're new to the show, we would love you to subscribe as well on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast player. Don't forget that if you have an automated voice-activated device, and I don't want to say any of those names, you can say, hey, this person, whatever you are, play the Catholics of Oz, and you will 90% of the time get us our shows, so, which is great, get our latest episodes. Don't forget that SQPN also hosts all of its shows on YouTube, including the Catholics of Oz. You can subscribe there, and don't forget to hit the bell to get new notifications when new episodes of ours and other shows are released. If you have some time, we would love a beautiful, happy 5-star review and a comment on any of those podcast directories that you listen on, because it helps us to reach more people. And as I always say, this is what we're all about. We do what we do. Sometimes the quality changes, but like based on how we were going this morning, but we do what we do to reach out to people and have a bit of fun with you as well. So let's begin now with our first topic in Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Oh. Spiritually,
ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one god, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So, Lido and Caroline, as you know, we're going through the season of Lent at the moment, and we are well on our way to Easter, so things are chugging along. And, yeah, and I wanted to share a nice, easy topic today, one that all of our listening community can get on board with. And the topic is making the kitchen part of Lent, even when we're not fasting, and this is from Alatia. And I thought this might be just an interesting one for us to talk about. And I did like the intention behind this article. So I'm just going to go through a couple of things that are on here and we'll just hear some of our thoughts. So it says here, even the mundane chores of grocery shopping and cooking can be occasions of grace this Lent. The key word for me is grace. God can be part of our shopping, part of our cooking and things like that. It's hard to plan and prepare meals every day, 7 days a week, all year round. Whether we live alone or with our family, it's impossible to escape culinary obligations. Yet feeding ourselves is far from being a chore. It's a pleasure for the body, but also a delight for the soul. And it says here, Lent offers a golden opportunity to put joy into our daily tasks, starting with cooking. So there are 5 tips, and I'm going to share those with you now. The first tip, make working in the kitchen a language of love. Different people have different ways of expressing their feelings. For some people, the most comfortable way of showing love and affection is by cooking. When we cut up fresh vegetables for a colorful salad, even though we feel tired, we let our guests know that we love them. So the Lenten suggestion here is while grocery shopping and while working in the kitchen, try to think of those you love. Also, try to be available during meals. Make meal preparation an opportunity to be present and give yourself in a different way. So I like the idea of preparing food. Think about the people that you're preparing food for. Show them that you love them by putting some effort, some care, knowing that you're not just doing a chore, but you're making a bit of a sacrifice of your time and your work in preparing a meal as a way of showing people that you love them. Caroline, Lino, can you guys relate to this at all?
Yeah, for sure. Well, like me as a mother, you know.
totally understand.
I prepare, you know, 99% of meals at home. And so, you know, you always want your family to eat healthily. And I guess that's one way I can show my love during Lent and other times, obviously. But yeah, so I'm always trying to think of something healthy for my kids to eat, something that they'll actually eat, you know, things like that. Yeah, so that's one way of doing it. I wanted to bring up, since you mentioned up to kitchen during Lent, a tradition that we have, a Maltese tradition, and Lino, you know about this because, you know, Bernadette's Maltese. Making figoli.
Oh, figoli. Yes.
So, there's a labor of love. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so, wow. Yes.
It's an Easter, like a big Easter cookie, like a double cookie sort of with a, what do you call it, almond filling in the middle.
Oh, it's tasty.
And
very tasty.
And it's so yummy. So
I'm thinking about it right now.
Mm. Yeah. And like, I think people really actually enjoy it a lot more than Easter eggs, you know, the chocolate eggs. So,
oh, yes.
That's for me a really loving way, I guess you could say, for me to show people that, you know, I love them. You know, and I'd like to give them something nice, and that's something from my heart because it's a tradition. Maltese tradition, and I like to make it from, you know, from scratch and give it to people. So
it's beautiful when it's done that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice. I don't like to buy them because, you know, I know how to make them and I think they taste nicer when it, obviously, I mean, if you like your version of it, it tastes nicer. So, and you can put different twists on it and things like that. So yeah, that's my example.
Yeah. Nice. I love the Caroline unique figoli now. It's it's something we do look forward to and it is a labor of love. Lino, I know that when we are quite a few of us are visiting and there's a barbecue that, you know, you're cooking all the meat and everything up and doing all that. Would you call that a labor of love for the people that you're cooking for as well?
Definitely. There's always a saying that A way to a man's heart is through the cooking. Or something like that?
Through his stomach.
Stomach.
Oh, wow. Okay, yes. That's the way. Look, for us, we're cooking for Lent. Wow. It's trying to not to cook too much during Lent.
True, yeah.
You know? We have the traditional fasting and everything. But I think, like Caroline said, when you cook something that you've made, and I'm not going to say through your blood, sweat, and tears, but minus the blood, whatever it is. Split in tears of making something and looking at it, and you've made it, and you're giving it to, you know, people you care about and love and everything. That's great to do. When I cook at with a barbecue, I know that I'm making sure that I'm cooking whatever I need and what I'm doing for the people. You know what I mean? And doing it right. And I, of course, some people, oh my goodness me, my in-laws love their meat. Oh, rock hard for some reason.
That's the traditional Aussie way, isn't it? Like really cooked.
Yeah, it's really cooked.
Need a chainsaw to cut it in half. Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
Charred. Like you got to char it. Otherwise, no good.
It's just char. It's just ash by the time you.
Yeah.
And you know, some people like it medium rare, or even not too rare. But it's that way of cooking that you know that I'm cooking for this person who I love and care about, and this person and this person. And yeah, it's if I through Lent, it's going to be interesting for us. So for now, we're trying to figure out what to do for next dinner or lunch. Trying to prepare for the week, and like Caroline will know that you'll try to plan your foods for the 3 week. Can I make this spaghetti bolognese and last it for about 3 or 4 days? Few days.
Not with
you know,
my
whatever.
Kids, no.
Exactly.
They get bored.
Exactly. And the same with families with big a lot of people. You know, you're trying to plan and everything like that. And with Lent, I don't know. Is that a challenge in a sense? You know what I mean? Is it trying not to make too much food or too little? You know what I mean, guys? Are you trying to cut it down?
Yeah. Individual families make their choices about how they go about that, I think. Yeah. Caroline?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like if you do like not to have meat on Fridays, you think of something kind of a simple fish dish, not like a big prawns and lobsters and big calamari. Amazingly delicious fish dish to make up for no meat.
So hungry.
If you're into
big
that.
Pile of fish and chips.
Sorry, I had some calamari last night.
All right, let's move on. That's good.
Yeah, I made myself hungry too. Sorry.
We've got to get away from this hunger. I like this second suggestion. If the first one is about the people who are close to you that you love, this one is about people who are not in your household. It says make a Laudato Si cuisine, respectful of humanity and the environment. And I think all of us have something to say about this. But it says, what if we were to buy fewer processed foods and more basic whole foods that are locally sourced? Respecting nature in the kitchen often implies a kind of conversion. It includes both our choice of products and the way we prepare them without wasting food, also saving resources such as water and energy. And the Lenten suggestion is, spend a little more time than usual preparing meals. Buy unprocessed foods and prepare them yourselves. After 40 days, write down how much you saved and donate that money to charity, like, for example, Project Compassion, which is the Catholic Church's charity here in Australia. Caroline and Lino and myself as well, into different degrees, we all grow food in our gardens. Caroline, let's start with you. What do you think about this suggestion?
Yeah, well, I mean, I try to not use much processed foods anyway in general because I think it's healthier and you know where your food's coming from if you're getting it from straight from vegetables and straight from meat and, you know, and you can control what's going into your meal. So, you know, just even from a health perspective, I try not to have too much coming from cans and things. And yeah, I love to especially get herbs out of my garden. I've got little tomatoes out of my garden. I managed to get a cucumber out of my garden. You know,
cool.
I'm still in the experimental stage with my, fence vegetable patch. But I managed to get a few things out of this, which I'm really happy about. So that's, you know, that's going really well. So, yeah, you do feel that connection with the environment and, you know, it's good to – and our eggs, of course, from the chickens.
Yes, so, that's right. You're doing that too. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, like I've mentioned too with the compost and, you know, the stuff, the waste that you get from, you know, preparing food, put into the compost, then I can use that to in turn nourish my veggies in the garden and even giving scraps to the chickens, so that waste goes to the chickens and they love it, you know. They just love to have dinner. You know, they come now every dinner time, just a side note, knocking at the window like rah, 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 behind my door because they can smell me cooking dinner and they know that they're going to get something. So,
awesome.
Anyway, so yeah, I really like that. Aspect.
Wait, do they, is that the sound they make, or do they go, where are the scraps, I say, the scraps?
Yes, they have that accent because they're, yes, no, they do definitely, they are part of the family, most definitely, so yeah. Not to mention the cats who circle under the table as well.
Yes.
It's a very nature way of eating and preparing food. Yes, sorry.
Yeah. No, that's great. Lino, I know you and Bernadette also have been growing your own herbs and your own vegetables to a degree. So how does that work for you guys? Is that pretty successful?
Well, yes and no. probably no. We still have mint growing, and I think mint's like a weed, man. It's only small, but if you don't look at, water like every plant, but it just grows everywhere. It's sort of taking over the other side of the fence now, so I have to chop it down and everything.
At least it will smell nice when you cut it down.
Oh,
you have a minty,
it is, man.
Minty environment.
I love when it sits on my fingers and go, mint.
Yeah.
And I think about, chewing gum. And, you know, a few years ago, we used to grow vegetables. We've got a vegetable patch here on our side of the house here. And I've been lazy. I've been trying to plant and put some vegetables there. I don't know what season. I have to look at the Bunnings website and say, what kind of season is it? What kind of, you know, plant for that? You know, we used to do a lot then. Actually, herbs. I can mention the word Woolworths is selling those little pots.
They're giving away seeds, yeah, like plant
seeds.
Flowers and herbs and vegetables, which is great during Lent. You know, it's
quite well with the topic, isn't it?
It's good because actually we've joked about this in previous podcasts about how, and they're doing it again, the whole perfect for Lent thing, the advertising campaign.
Yes,
a couple, was it 2 years ago, we joked about how on their website had perfect for Lent on the page where they were selling dog food online. Yes, we're just like, get it together, guys.
Maybe for dogs, but not for
This year they've improved a little bit. So they've got perfect for Lent. You sent this, Carol, I think, with the spread of like all fish and all this.
They're getting
closer. Every year they're improving a bit. So
get in there.
But the seeds during Lent, I mean, I wish it was deliberate because that's actually a really powerful message too.
It is.
But I like the idea, I guess, at my house, so Isabel grows a couple of herbs here and there, which is, you know, fairly successful. We had a tomato plant just pop up out of the ground in our backyard and go wild. And I know that has to do with birds and how they spread seeds and things like that, but we've got this big bush of a tomato plant. And
You've got a few one.
Yeah.
And we've been enjoying them.
They're like sort of like these medium-sized tomatoes, and they're actually like we've been throwing them in salads and sandwiches, and which has been great. So and the thing is, again, like this is getting back to what this point was all about. It was saying that, you know, where you save money, put that money aside for other people, and also you're looking after the earth by being sustaining with the earth. You know, scripture talks about how Adam and Eve, you know, I'm paraphrasing very badly in Genesis, but the idea of keeping and tilling the earth, and that's our thing now, because the earth, we look after the earth and it looks after us. And that's the grace of God, you know, in another way in play. The third tip, very, very simple one. It says vary colors and tastes by applying a few simple formulas. We can break the monotony of routine and, you know, try some different things. You know, think of colors. You know, if you use carrots all the time, what are some other orange things that you could use? Or what are some other carrots? Because there are violet carrots, there are white carrots. And things like that. So maybe just try something different. cook your potatoes differently. If you steam them all the time, roast them, do something else, you know, find another way. And the suggestion, though, it says, change up your usual recipes, ask people that you know, neighbors, friends, family, etc., about how they prepare certain dishes. Then, while using their ideas, to, you know, their recipes, give thanks for those people and ask the Lord to bless them and answer their prayers. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep. Another way your mealtime could, you know, preparation of mealtime can be useful for other people. Yeah. Caroline, is there a recipe you've ever taken from another person that's been really good?
Let me think. Well, Harry enjoys, he calls it yellow rice. It's like an Indian rice.
And it's something
that I didn't know how to cook. Actually, Mum went and learned how to cook Indian rice.
Oh,
and
nice.
Now he has it when he goes to Mum's house. So it's not more that I learned how to cook it, but Mum learned how to cook it. But I've learned how to cook from Mum anyway, so I've got all her recipes. But I do love to discuss with, say, like colleagues and things, because my colleagues, we're literally representing the whole planet from, you know, we're different, different countries. Yeah. So I do love to talk to them about food, how they prepare it, and it does give me ideas on how to change up my food a little bit, you know, the bit of extra spice or my chicken a little bit differently, you know, maybe adding a lemon or adding some herbs or spices that I don't normally use. And I really love this point. It's changing it up a bit. And I love the colors idea because when you – it's actually really healthy to have colorful food, they say. So, like, yeah, you try lots of different veggies, different, you know, and that way you can ensure that you're getting, you know, lots of different nutrients rather than having like all pasta, all potato, all one color, you know, foods. Like, mix it up a bit, and it's not just, you know, exciting to look at, but when you eat it, you get all the different flavors and you feel good for it too. So,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah,
definitely. Lino, have you or Bernie ever been given a recipe by someone else that you're thinking, why did we never have this in our house before?
Don't know if I remember. I can't remember if I got anything from Mum. Mum made a lot of things.
Oh, I'll tell you what. I got to tell you.
Oh, so here we go.
In our younger days, when we were a bit more wild and rebellious. No, it's not really true. But anyway, in our younger days, we used to hang out at Lino's house. And Lino's mother, oh my goodness, she was the queen of snacks. She made her own like spring rolls and all these things, and she just because we were over, we didn't ask for it. Just because we were over, this saint of a woman would come and just bring us spring rolls or ice cream with fruit. But oh my gosh, all these recipes that she knew that she would just bring us something to try. It was awesome. So yeah, actually, you know what? That's something to think of. You know, prayers for Mum. For anyone who's inspired us with these things. Just out of curiosity, and slightly selfishly on my part, does your mum still give you spring rolls? Because I'd be curious to come over and, you know, and try and have some.
Listeners, now first it was Tim Tams, now it's spring rolls.
Oh, yeah, we can talk about the Tim Tams. Yes, but Lino, that's an act of love, all right?
It is. I understand. Look, she does give us some spring rolls. It's funny that she gives me a call and goes, oh, Lino, can you come over? I've got some food for you. And I end up going there. And I think it happens to everyone. She goes, oh, here's your big rolls or here's your food. Can you help me with something? There you go. It's just like a little sign to say, can you help me? And here's something for it. And I go,
nice.
Mum, you don't have to do that. You just have to call me and say, I need something to be done. You don't have to, I wouldn't say bribe. But anyway, that's a bad
coax attempt.
No, coax attempt. You know, but yeah, she still does it, and she gives her food, and I've seen her do it. She does it individually, it's like she can bake 1,000 of them, and it's funny that I think this is where I got thing of watching soapies, because Mummy used to make the spring rolls while watching soapies. So Days of
Our Lives, Amanda Way,
The Restless, yes. Yeah, Young and the Restless, Bold and the Beautiful.
Don't get me started.
Like the sands of Yorgos, so are the days of our lives.
I'm going to go sidetrack with that one. Yeah. Sorry about that. But that's how she was doing it. She was making all the spring rolls very individually and everything. Bringing color into the food. That's interesting. You know, when I look at this picture and when you guys color the foods, there is one thing that always pops in my head and always will be MasterChef. There's always something about them. Yeah. About it. So bringing color, bringing food and taste in it.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness me, just talking about food, I think we keep on saying this on the podcast. I feel so hungry at the moment. I don't know why.
We shouldn't record before lunch.
I know. I think we're so hungry.
No,
that's
right. We should record after lunch. Yeah.
I think we should record after lunch.
Anyone who's listening right now, can you pause? Wait till lunchtime.
We're just gonna have lunch and we'll come back.
Just have lunch while you're listening.
Yes, please.
And sorry if you're like on the train or in a car and now you've got the grumbles in your tummy because we're going like this. I'm sorry.
Maybe we should put a warning at the beginning of the episode to
we should have had
some
a warning,
food
yeah.
with
yeah.
you while
this
you watch.
This episode
listen.
Contains references to food and may cause hunger in your
during Lent. Yeah. Oh no.
Although it's during Lent, so actually no apologies. Yeah, I take it back. Everything I just apologize for.
That's
true.
Let's just offer up our grumbling.
Offer it up to God. Done.
Yeah,
thanks for those. And you know, whether it's getting a recipe from someone or getting food from someone, because we, Isabel and I, you know, we go to Isabel's parents on Friday nights for dinner, and her mum always gives us food to take home. So she'll like from dinner, she cooks a lot so that there are meals for us. So we have either on Saturday or Sunday a meal that we don't have to cook because she's given it to us. But what if I'm thinking about this now, what if in our prayers when we say grace, if we offered a prayer for her as well, for Isabel's parents? Again, because we're thinking about someone else again. So can you say already just in three suggestions how our meals can be a time of grace as well, a time of greater grace? So tip number four, don't bear the burden of preparing meals alone. In a family, everyone can share responsibility for meals. Parents can make sure the cupboards are full to begin with, while children can give input on the menu and help prepare food according to their abilities. Everyone can take part in his or her own way. As a side note, every time we say to Alex, what would you like? He always goes, burger and chips. By involving everyone, the work becomes a common effort. So the Lenten suggestion is, involve your household in the preparation of meals. Participation can be very simple. For example, garnishing a dish by sprinkling chopped parsley on baked potatoes.
Ooh.
But even so, it brings the family together as a team. It isn't it in the kitchen when everyone's busy that we form special bonds and share stories of laughter? Caroline, any involvement of anyone in the kitchen while you're doing your thing?
Not as much.
But now you can.
Now I can. And just another side note, if I sprinkle parsley on anything, my boys will not eat it. So I'm not going to avoid that part.
Oh, wow.
Anything green, they're in that stage where they don't want to see green in their food. But mostly I do cook the meals. If my husband's around, he will help me prepare the meals. So he'll chop up veggies for me and whatever. When he'll cook a meal by himself, but he's often away, so like I'm preparing. But I have got the kids to come and help me stir things or help me cook on the fry pan or, you know, in a safe manner. it often involves them standing on a chair and kind of like standing, you know,
oh,
not too close.
So cool.
They're not tall enough.
I can see that.
You know, asking what they want for dinner, oh my goodness, it's dangerous. It's usually everything that I'm not going to make that night.
Pizza, burger, chips.
Harry's only got one thing, chicken tenders. It's like these.
Chicken tenders.
Yeah, he loves chicken.
Wow.
Marshmallows, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Whatever is not for dinner, they will love.
Wagon wheels.
Yeah.
Iced bovos.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I haven't had those for a while.
I know. Yeah,
preferably ice cream or pancakes or something like that. That's
I was going to say
problem.
Cheekily about ice verbo. I was going to say they haven't cancelled those too, have they?
Sorry.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Go on.
Yes, so because I've made like pancakes on Shrove Tuesday or like Harry's birthday or Frankie's birthday, they think that that pancake is a dinner, like, but it's not normally a dinner. That's what they will ask for. Or, you know, like sometimes, you know, like last night I took them out for dinner. They'd been asking for, you know, hog's breath. So we went there.
We should mention to everyone, hog's breath isn't the name of a cafe, just in case anyone has no idea what we're talking about.
It's mostly like
a steakhouse,
surf and turf type. Yeah, steakhouse.
TGI Fridays
like
sort
that.
of thingy.
Yeah, the kind of thing. But they've got a great meal. They do chicken nuggets, chips, a drink, and a dessert for the kids. So that's really, really
That's a seven-year-old boy's staple, so you're all sorted.
That's their meal. So, I mean, my favorite thing is that when I make something and they love it and I'm happy, you know. So,
Lino, what about you? Have you and Bernadette, you get something going in the kitchen, work together to prepare a meal sometimes?
Yes, we do. Yeah. Every time, like I was saying before, we're trying to plan our meals for every day. And then we sort of, when we have time to cook them, it's either whoever comes home first, in a sense, you know, he will start cooking the meal. And then whoever second comes of it, you know, we just help out bits and get the meal together, trying not to bump each other and elbow each other, even though the kitchen's massive, man. I remember our parents' places were so small and we're trying to,
of course,
shuffle, do the, multi-shuffle, but it's just a shuffle.
The kitchen shuffle, yeah.
I don't know, the Maltese one isn't a shuffle, it's more like a shove.
It's a shove,
I think.
Yeah.
Ow, ow. True. So we were together trying to prepare our meals together, you know. Like I said, if I come home first and we've got a pasta, oh my gosh, I'm getting hungry again. Anyway, I would cook the meat and get stuff ready to go. And then I'm trying to get the pasta first because the pasta was, oh my goodness me. I need some help from MasterChef. Just do the pasta first and then, do the, and then she'll start cooking the meat and I'll start cutting up all the vegetables and everything. Just, it's like a team effort, you know what I mean? And also it's being together as well because we've been so, doing work, of course, we're away, so not together. And then we're in the kitchen and also not only for couples, for families as well. And like Caroline said, the boys are stirring the pot and doing other things for it. It's not a project, but just being a family together in the kitchen, you know, and you can have chats, you know, so how's your day? Of course, the usual thing, how's your day at school? Good. How's your day at work? Okay. At least it's just a little conversation, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's something you start up. But yeah, I think cooking together as a family, it can be a great, awesome thing. And also, it sort of connects the family together. And also, after you cook, of course, you eat together. Hopefully, you can eat together at the dining table. These days, it's so different now. But yeah, you're in the dining and you can chat. It's just being together in the kitchen as a family.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And just sometimes, you know, it can all be surprising. So I think we were cooking one time and I think we had a friend of ours, I can't remember who it was, or someone in our kitchen, and boom. This person just went, bloop. You know what I mean? Was it she or he? I can't remember. It was so long ago anyway. This person just went, just chatted with us about random things. Mm-hmm. And we went, whoa, okay, here we go. Wow. Okay, was Bernie knows the person. And I think it's a person from work. And so, we just chatted. It relaxes them. Mm. It gets them, it's a conversation going. It's awesome.
Yeah, I think sometimes mealtime is not just the eating itself, it's everything that happens before, it's the preparation. In my family, probably more on the school holidays when I've got a little bit more free time and I'm not doing tons of work all the time, it's when Isabel and I cook the most together. And I actually love those moments, look forward to them, because especially the conversation and the bonding. We get Damien and Alexander involved sometimes, but usually it involves a mess afterwards. So we have to see. But Damien and I, we cooked pancakes the other day together, which was great. Awesome. You know, did things like that.
Maple syrup. Ice cream.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, thanks. I need to buy some more. Thanks for reminding me.
What is it? So things like that are really good. Alexander, obviously, he's 3 years old now, so he can stir. He can put milk into a bowl, or you can do just the basics, but he loves that. Or he'll just come into the kitchen and hear that there's something cooking on the stove and he'll want to see it, so I lift him up and let him have a look. Safely, of course, not too close, but so he can see. And he goes, oh, you're making this? Oh, you're making that? You know, he's really happy about it.
That's so cool.
But it's bonding as well, which is beautiful.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tip number 5, the last one. Obviously, the climax of all the other tips, make it an opportunity to pray. Our life is made up of many tasks that we did not choose. We accomplish them willingly and as quickly as possible. or we can grumble and drag our feet. Yes, let's recall that these tasks are all an opportunity for us to choose to be aware of the Lord's presence. I'll repeat that, to choose to be aware of the Lord's presence. So we don't have to, you know, recite verbal prayers constantly, such as praying the rosary while stirring sauce, etc. But we can unite ourselves to God through little prayers. We can trust to Him those for whom we're preparing the meal, without forgetting ourselves, of course. Name people for whom we want to pray, sing, listen to music, and give thanks to God for His blessings. So the Lenten suggestion here is, let God's light enter the kitchen. While applying ourselves to what we're doing, we can let the Lord bring joy to our hearts. I think that's it speaks for itself, but it's a great one. Definitely. I won't ask you guys if you pray while you're cooking. But just an anecdote, two things really quickly. I remember Caroline, growing up in our house, that especially in the later days when technology made it more possible, but I know that Mum, would have the rosary on or a talk from a priest or religious or something else while doing things in the kitchen. I myself, if I'm cooking in the kitchen, I'll have a podcast, usually something that's got some kind of faith content, or sometimes it'll just be Christian music that I connect with. That helps me with my prayer. So, music is easier because I don't get as distracted while I'm cooking. So, I try to stay with it. Or sometimes I'll listen to something prayer related. It might be a prayer based podcast, like those short ones that where it's, 5-10 minute prayers that you can just follow along while you're doing tasks and so on. Because it helps me focus on that prayer. But I like the idea of, pray for who you're cooking for, pray for people you love, pray for this and that, yeah. Do either of you, instead of going around the table, do either of you have anything else you want to add to that last point?
Frankie's a big one for grace. So, not so much praying during meals, during preparation, but definitely he's the one that if we haven't said grace or if I've just forgotten or started shoving food in my mouth, I'm like, no, Mummy, have to say the prayer. The prayer is, the meal prayer. So he always leads us in prayer. So,
wow. Yeah. All right. We're a little bit over halfway through the show. So let's, let's roll on.
Wow. Yeah. Yep.
And also, it's just two things I wanted to mention at the top of this. I'm thinking of raising the bets. So Dom and Melanie, every episode, are always talking about something they're cooking. I don't think my culinary skills come anywhere close to the amazing things that they talk about. However, if you want to think about different meal suggestions, ways that you can change up your foods, every week they're talking about something that they've cooked. And it's sometimes my favorite part of the show because I listen to new suggestions. So that might be a tip that you want to have a look at. And why don't you pray for Dom and Melanie? There could be like thousands of prayers coming their way now because of this article. And also the link to this article will be in our show notes. So if you'd like to read more about it, please do. And share with us your meal suggestions. What are you doing? Give Caroline, Lino and I some different meal ideas.
We all need ideas.
And we might even try and cook them and tell you how it went as well. Don't make it complicated. We're talking
easy quick meals for me. I'm not a 5-hour pot person. I'm just a quick on the stove person.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on from cooking and let's talk about science.
Ah, what a fine day for science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
Caroline, over to you. We've got some interesting topics today. So first of all, you wanted to talk about how vaccines work, considering in Australia right now we've got a massive vaccine rollout program that's getting bigger and bigger as we go along. I think the plan is to have the population, anyone who wants it, the population vaccinated by October to combat the COVID crisis that the world is going on at the moment. So Caroline, how do vaccines work?
Okay, so I guess I wanted to specifically speak about the vaccines we are receiving in Australia, and they're quite well known all over the world because they're being used everywhere as well. So I wanted to talk about the Pfizer BioNTech and the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccines, and it's good that we're actually using two different ones because I can talk about how they work differently. So we know how coronavirus affects the body. It's, it's a respiratory illness. It can cause severe illness, breathlessness, aches and pains, fever, chill, loss of taste and smell. It can make people really sick and end up with a pneumonia-like disease, and unfortunately it can kill, and it has killed a lot of people around the world. So the idea of the vaccines is to mostly at the moment just to stop severe disease. Okay, so we may get to a point if we just have the vaccines that it can just become like a common cold and we won't die from it. We won't get severe disease. Okay, so let me start with just a little very quick lesson on immunity and a few of the different immune cells in our bodies. So I'm going to talk about three different types: macrophages, which are white blood cells, and these comes from the cdc.gov website, so I'm just borrowing their terminology here. So macrophages are white blood cells that swallow up and digest germs or dead or dying cells. They leave behind parts of the invading germ cells, and they're called antigens. So the antigens are like the markers that tell you, you know, something's invading your body. The body identifies the antigens as dangerous and stimulates the antibodies to attack them. B lymphocytes are defensive white blood cells. They produce antibodies that attack the pieces of virus left behind by macrophages. Then you've got T lymphocytes, and they're another type of defensive white blood cell, and they attack cells in the body that have already been infected. And they go on to say the first time a person's infected with the COVID-19 virus, it can take several days or weeks for the body to make and employ these cells in the body that you need to get over the infection. But after the infection, the person's immune system remembers, or it can remember, it's that we're not really sure about how long immunity lasts, but how to protect the body against that disease. The body keeps a few T lymphocytes called the memory cells, and they can go quickly into action if the body encounters the virus again. So that's how the body works. Now, with the vaccine, we want to take a shortcut with all of that, still employing the body's cells, but we want to get the body to recognize quickly when a virus comes into the body, particularly this SARS-CoV-2 virus. So let's talk about the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine first. So this is actually a new type of vaccine that's been made. I haven't used it before. It's called an mRNA vaccine. So they're saying that this one is about 95% effective. So it's probably kind of the best one so far, if I'm so bold to say that. So what's mRNA? Maybe we should start there. So mRNA is a single-stranded RNA molecule, which is actually complementary to strands of a gene in your DNA. So it's an RNA version of the gene. So what happens in your body naturally? So you've got a cell. Inside a cell, you've got the nucleus where your DNA is kept. And the DNA is read by a process called transcription. And what happens is that little gene in the DNA, the DNA will unzip a little bit because it's a double-stranded molecule. So unzip a little bit, and that little bit is read. And a little mRNA strand that actually codes for a protein is made. So then the mRNA moves out from the nucleus into the cell cytoplasm. So that's just like the liquid part inside the cell. And it's got all sorts of machinery that makes energy, it makes proteins, it makes all sorts of things. And when the mRNA is in your cytoplasm, one of these, it's called an organelle, is called a ribosome. It moves along the mRNA and makes a protein. And that little protein will then exit the cell and go do what it needs to do in the body. Okay, so in this case, it needs to go and help the immunity in your body and fight the virus. So the mRNA in the Pfizer vaccine codes for the SARS-CoV-2 virus. It codes for the spike protein. So why do you want the spike protein? So the body knows how to fight it, okay? So it's not actually causing a disease in your body, but it's making an immune response in your body, okay? So you're not making COVID-19 in your body. You're just making that spike protein. By itself, it's not going to cause disease. So they have these little vials that, of the vaccine inside is saline, and these mRNA molecules are wrapped up in little, they're called lipid nanoparticle spheres, okay? And then these is injected into the muscle tissue. Then once it's in the body, the mRNA floats around, goes into the cells of the body, and then the body uses the machinery in your cells to make the spike protein. And then your B cells and T cells are activated and then mount an attack. So then you've got that immune memory that I was talking about in your body. So as soon as the real SARS-CoV-2 virus comes into your body, the body goes, ah, I've seen this before. Let's get onto it and get rid of it. Let's get rid of it out of the body. So it doesn't take several weeks for your body to go, oh, there's something in your body. We need to get in there. And, you know, it doesn't give your body time to get the disease. Okay. So it just immediately goes, I know what this is. Let's get rid of it. So
can I just jump in there? So just to get my head around this.
Sure. Yeah, please.
All right. So basically what it's doing is it is preventing or reducing drastically the possibility of getting symptoms from the disease, whereas otherwise you would get sick, get symptoms, then the body would try and fight it when it sees something that's wrong, whereas now it's trying to say, oh, we recognize it, let's get it. And in that sense, you're not likely to get like a severe response in terms of symptoms. What's going on?
Exactly. So you may still get like a little sniffle or something, because your body will, you know, the immune response will happen and you still get a few symptoms, but it won't go as far as causing severe disease in your body. It'll just, you know, you'll get virus in there, the immune system will kick in, you might still get a few sniffles. It might just end up being like a little bit of a cold, but it will go, like it will just disappear rather than progressing on to you feeling really horrible.
So person who in the past that we've seen ends up on a ventilator, this would be unlikely less likely.
If this vaccine is effective in the person, if it's, you know, it does what it's supposed to do, then that person will not get sick. So that's why they're trying to vaccinate, you know, they want to vaccinate the more vulnerable people first, especially in Australia. That's what the plan is.
Yeah, so, elderly copped it very badly, unfortunately.
That's right. Lost a lot of elderly and immunocompromised people, people who are vulnerable to being unwell, those are the people that are going to be protected. In fact, the Pfizer vaccine is the one that's going to be used first and on those people. I've been hearing that this, the Pfizer vaccine is very effective at protecting against all the variants that we've been hearing about, you know, this is the one to have, like, this is kind of the top one.
So the other thing, I guess, is this is a sign of hope for, because I think one of the things we'd also be worried about is it's almost like an unlucky draw, isn't it? That if some people who got COVID-19, they had, once they recovered, they still had chronic symptoms, some for months, some still going. Yes. We don't know how long that might last for, well, hopefully not a lifetime, but potentially that's what it is. Could the vaccine, if it prevents that serious illness, could it also prevent that chronic continuation of symptoms as well?
Yeah, so you'd expect that. I mean, they don't know yet. We don't know. Like, they don't know a lot yet because it's so new and these vaccines are so new, especially the mRNA one. So they are hoping that, you know, if it prevents you getting very sick, then it prevents that long COVID that you're talking about, you know. So, that's the idea. So still, you know, watch this space. So
and,
still learning
and
a
one
lot.
More. Sorry, I've got all these questions. The other thing as well is, so at the current way these vaccines are, they're not going to stop you from getting coronavirus. You could still get COVID-19, like you could catch a cold or a flu. As we said though, they'll stop symptoms, but they won't stop you the actual transmission of it from person to person. Is that right? Or am I?
That's the other thing they're not sure about either. They're not sure. They think still there might be a bit of a transition. Transmission. They're not sure. They're thinking that once everybody's, you know, it's a common vaccination, that it'll become an endemic thing. So it'll be like, you know, we've got circulating colds and flus. It'll just become like that. So you need to get your booster shot every year, you know, to protect yourself from it. If you don't take anything, you're likely to get quite unwell. But if you take this vaccine, you're quite, you know, you're protecting yourself from being very unwell.
I guess if your symptoms are reduced, you're also reducing transmission in a way. Would that be, I'm asking amateur questions here. But
if I'm thinking logically about it, if you get virus in your body and your immune system is stopping replication of that virus in your body, you're probably unlikely to spread it a lot, you know.
As much.
So like if you've got a flu, but you've had the vaccine, probably you still probably could give the flu to someone else if you've got it, but the vaccine will stop you from getting very sick, you know. So I think that's how they're, you know, I mean, look, if once the world opens up again and, you know, everybody's moving around again, it's going to be hard not for it not to spread around. So
sure. Yeah. Thanks. I threw a lot of questions at you. So
no, that's okay. I mean, yeah, it's very interesting. You know, it's such a new thing. But I thought, I'll give you a couple more points about the Pfizer vaccine too, because these are probably important to know about. This, the vaccine actually, it's a bit of a difficult one because it needs to be stored quite cold. So between negative 80 and negative 60 degrees Celsius.
Whoa.
It's got to be refrigerated. I think it can be left out for a little bit, but then after that, it's no good after that. You need to have two doses. So you've got to have your first dose, then you've got to have a booster shot.
Wow.
Two shots.
Wow.
Yes, you do. And like I was saying, we're not sure about the long-lasting immunity yet. It may be something you have to have every 6 months, every year. We're not sure. I did read somewhere, though, or I might have heard it on the CoronaCast podcast.
CoronaCast, yep.
That, you know, if you've had COVID already, this vaccine may actually act as a booster for you. So you've already got a bit of memory in your body. But if you have a vaccine, then it could kind of help with your immunity. Wow. So
interesting.
Okay.
Yep. Not that you want to get it, but the disease, but definitely, you know, if you've been unlucky enough to suffer from it, then you'll have your booster shot when you've got your vaccine. So, yeah. Anyway, so the next vaccine that we will be getting, I think the majority of the population here in Australia anyway, will be getting the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. And this is a little bit different, and it's more of a traditional vaccine. So this is a viral vector vaccine. So what happens is the genes coding for the spike protein in the SARS-CoV-2 virus are actually inside a virus. It's a cold virus, an adenovirus. Now, and that is injected into your body. The virus itself won't make you sick. So it's not like you're getting injected with a virus, but you're getting injected with, it's just a vector. It's going to carry the genes to make the protein into your body. So it pretty much works the same way. You inject it into your arm, and then the genetic material will be inserted into the body cells, the spike protein is made, and then an immune response is initiated, just like in the Pfizer vaccine. This one can be stored in a normal fridge, so it's not so difficult to work with. You also need you need two doses, so you need the first dose, and after a couple of weeks or a few weeks, I'm not sure of the exact timing, but you need to have a booster shot.
I think from CoronaCast, this is the podcast we refer to a lot, but I think 12 weeks was the time between the first and the second dose.
I think you're right.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
So this vaccine, it's only got about a 63% efficacy. It could be higher in people. It could, you know, but it's doesn't mean that you shouldn't take it. It just means you take it because you get some protection from it. You know, so if everybody gets vaccinated, then we've all got protection from the virus. So I would err on the side of taking it rather than not, because you just don't want to have this horrible disease. You don't know how it's going to affect your body.
Would it be safe to say that in time, when they learn more about the virus and the way it mutates, et cetera, that the vaccines will improve, more efficacy will increase as we go along?
Probably.
We probably might even have more choice about the type of vaccine, which is something that a few of us would be thinking about as well. But in the future, we'd probably like to choose a vaccine that we know, so that we know more about, not know more about, but that we're more comfortable with the way it was put together.
Yes, for sure. I mean, obviously, I think it was this Oxford one, the AstraZeneca one, was produced, like we mentioned, was developed using a fetal cell stem cell line from an abortion, but like in the 1960s. The Pfizer one wasn't, but it may have been tested along the line in similar tissues, so we're not sure. And look, we don't really know how everything is tested. It's not like out there publicly unless you go looking for it. Having said that, we do have a responsibility to protect each other, protect ourselves from serious disease. And vaccines are always in development. So, you know, it's a novel virus. We haven't had it before. And
yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's probably going to be the case, because it's an mRNA virus, it does change all the time. Like I mentioned, there are several variants. Because there have been, you know, some countries have just let it go, it's actually naturally changing in population. So variants pop out all the time. And it's very similar with the flu. They're always changing the flu vaccine every year for whatever variant is going around that year. So it will probably end up being like that. I did hear on CoronaCast too, there was thought about maybe having a COVID-19 and a flu vaccine in one go.
A combo one, yes, that's right.
Combination. Yeah. Wow. We have a quadrivalent flu vaccine every year. It's got four different strains. They're not sure if they would interact in the same tube or not, the two different vaccines, not sure. Because so you can put, like, I think there's some children vaccines which are multi, you know, they're different diseases, you know, they're not diseases, they're different vaccines for different diseases inside the vial. So, you know, this is just, you know, they're going to be working on it all the time, because it's super important. You know, it's a pandemic, so... and, you know, to have a vaccine after a year or so is pretty good. So it's just about rollout now, which is the big issue. So
yeah. And just to add, for people who might be a bit squeamish or have doubts or questions or uncertainty, which is natural and completely understandable, the church has put out teaching. So first of all, Caroline, you and I discussed this in a previous podcast last year. I can't remember which episode it was, but we have actually talked about the vaccines as they started being spoken about, being created and things like that. And the other thing I want to say is that the advice from the church that came out last year is not new advice. It's advice that's always been there, but a lot of people have been asking for clarification. So the basic points are that if the only one that's available is the one that's available, and even if it has come from a source that we're not too happy about or comfortable with, it is morally acceptable to take that vaccine for a couple of reasons. And the key thing also is that if you choose not to take the vaccine, which is a choice that you are welcome to make, then you still have to ensure that you are protecting people around you. So, for example, the common example is you have an elderly person that lives in a house with you. They're vulnerable, and you choose not to get vaccinated, that's fine. But you need to make sure that you are doing the things that you need to do to make sure that person is safe, so that if you get the virus, you don't pass it on to them and something happens. So that might include, for example, wearing a face mask, social distancing, sanitizing hands, all those things. Maybe in your workplace, it could be that thing as well. So the choice, we're given the freedom of choice, but whatever choice we make, we still have to ensure that we're protecting people around us, whether they're family, friends, or strangers. And later on, when different vaccines start becoming available, you can request a vaccine where you feel more certain that the way it was put together was a way that we feel is ethically done. But the bottom line is you can take a vaccine like the AstraZeneca one, which is the only one that's available to us at this stage. You can take that vaccine until a future date when a different one becomes available.
Yeah. Can I guys put a spanners in the works? Hopefully.
Throw a spanner. Let's go.
Sorry. I hope it doesn't take too long. Why are people demonstrating? Why are people saying they don't want to take the vaccine? Is it because they got their human rights, or are they just saying that something conspiracy going on with it?
Yes.
It varies, doesn't
all
it?
Of
it
the
really
above.
Varies.
I don't want to speak too much about it, but just because when I see it, I'm thinking, people, why? It's not going to be a danger to you. And Caroline has explained it very well today. Hopefully people can understand that this is helping us, you know? Mm. And I don't know. I'm sorry.
Can I add to that? One thing that doesn't help is that, I don't know what it's like in other parts of the world. I can only speak for Australia, but our news, you know, our media, again, I hate going, oh, it's the media, but our mainstream, commercial television media, they don't present people in the best of light. So you might have people protesting for, you know, they have legitimate reasons. I'm not going to have a go at them for doing that. You know, they have the freedom to protest. But they pick on the extreme points of view.
Yeah.
You know, like this is a deep state government conspiracy to control our lives and put a microchip in us and all that, you know. And it's really not fair to lump everyone together. Like, I'm not going to protest. I'm going to take the vaccine 100%, all right? But that's the choice I'm making. But if a person chooses not to take the vaccine, a reasonable person who will do everything they can to protect the people around them, they shouldn't be lumped in with this one size fits all description of, they must be a conspiracy theorist. They must be an anti-vaxxer. We've really got to bring people along with us rather than shaming people and throwing people into corners.
Exactly.
And, I just feel so sad that this is the way that publicly, this is what I don't know, our modern communication tends to do. Like what happened to dialogue? We've got to keep that going.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
If you've got concerns about a vaccine, you should be allowed to ask questions, and depending on the answers you get, ask questions of credible sources like Caroline.
Thank you.
And when you get answers, then be able to make an informed decision rather than you're a terrible person because either because you are taking the vaccine or because you're not taking the vaccine. You know, it's like you hate this. You're a terrible person because you make bad ethical choices. You know, we've got to be so careful with our dialogue.
I think
the way it's presented.
I think there are legitimate reasons. There are health reasons. Some people just can't take vaccines because they're allergic to what's inside them. That's fair enough. Some people just don't want to take the vaccine because of some other reason. And that's okay. So we just have to recognize that in each other and just move on from there.
Yeah, we're a human family, all right? Let's be a human family then.
That's right. And look after all of our members. The other thing too is, like, the most important thing is if you don't know something and if you're a little bit worried or scared about the vaccine because it's a new one, go and read about it. There's heaps of resources on there. I've found so many. Educate yourself about it and then make a decision, because it's better to have an educated decision than just an opinionated one, in my point of view. I don't want to offend anyone by saying that, but I think it's a good idea. Go read about the vaccine, go see how it works. And if you still don't want to take it, that's perfectly fine. But we just remember, like Lindsay was saying, just protect others, you know, and you do all the things that we need to do to protect each other from the virus, like we are now.
And I'd say don't go to the news to the news as your source for reliable information. Because unfortunately, there's a lot of opinion editorializing.
Yeah. There's a lot of great government health websites. There's a lot of scientific websites. There's just universities. There's so many.
Ask your doctor.
Websites.
Yeah, speak to a GP.
The doctor will be able to talk to you about it as well. Yeah. So yeah.
Great. Thanks for that, Caroline. We've got a tiny bit more science. I know we're going over time. So at this stage, anyone who's listening, if you want to get a cup of tea, pause, if you've been eating, if you want to get dessert, out of the fridge.
So
Caroline,
hungry.
Let's do these short little ones very quickly. Footage from Mars. Oh my gosh, what's going on?
So didn't we mention last episode? So the landing on Mars had just happened. Perseverance landed. and successfully, weren't we saying, I wish we could have seen the footage of it landing. It would have been amazing. Well, turns out a few days after we said that, they had footage. So they had cameras on every stage. So we were able to see the descent of the rover down to the planet. We could see the jets stirring up
the sky crane. The sky crane.
See the sky crane. And then we could see up from the lander onto the sky crane. We could see it. I think everybody who saw it was completely blown away. This is footage we've never ever seen before.
Yeah.
And in such amazing detail. In color, it's just like you're watching a movie. It was real. It was really good, really real. So,
Not just computer graphics, which is what we're used to, a CGI presentation. Because that's all we could do in the past. Yeah.
Yes.
But now I just love that we saw from the rover looking at the sky crane and from the sky crane looking at the rover and seeing how it just hovered and landed it safely on the ground and then flew away.
Then the sky crane flew away.
Yeah, someone tweeted, there was footage of the sky crane, and then someone tweeted, now where are the aliens landing on another world?
Yes.
Which is amazing.
100%. It's so good. Yeah, that was so good to watch. Really, really amazing. And just recently, Perseverance took its first, not steps because it's got wheels, but made its first little movement. Had a bit of a drive on the planet, and that worked well, so... They've been working on doing that for 2 weeks and finally they've done it. So congratulations to the team for that.
Wow. Yeah, looking forward to following all these missions that are on Mars at the moment from everyone. Yeah.
Exactly.
And Caroline, Mars. Cool.
Just very briefly, Starship SN10. Oh, so now at the time of recording, this is going to be about 2 weeks ago, but or a week and a half ago. So I watched this with some colleagues in my office at work, this 10-minute thing that happened. But very briefly, give us a breakdown of what we saw.
Oh my
gosh.
Best
of both worlds in this one, I think.
I know. So SN10, it was a few hold offs. So like they tried and then they had to wait for another window. And then by chance, the last time they stopped and said, we're just going to wait for another window. I thought it was 2 hours. It actually was only about an hour. Luckily, I had it running there. And then all of a sudden, it took off. And did its beautiful flying. This one looked a lot more stable.
Yes, it was, yeah.
So it flew up gently, did its flip, the kick, whatever they call it. It went horizontal and came down. Then there was a bit of a flare of fire on the side.
Yes,
And then we learned later, I think it was a bit of a methane leak. And then it came down and it looked like it was quite steady. It came down more vertically than the other two, where the others were kind of a messy, wasn't much control. But this one had a gentle landing and it landed.
Yeah.
Now, they say it didn't land on its gear, but it did have a tilt. And I was like, I'm not sure about this. This is not looking stable. I'm like, that's going to tip over. That's going to tip. And I just left it running there. And I think it was several minutes, wasn't it? After a while.
About 10 minutes,
Oh, my God. I kept it going.
It took a second
and
hop.
I was, And then all of a sudden, oh, my gosh, it blew up.
It exploded.
Like the rocket kind of took off and then just exploded and just landed disintegrated into nothing.
Yeah.
Wow, I think that was almost better than actually exploding on landing.
We got everything.
Oh my
gosh,
everybody's like, "Yay, congratulations!" But there was some commentary saying, "I think the methane's building up. I think it's building up, building up." And then all of a sudden, it just
bang!
Yep.
So my 3-year-old Alexander, I show him all of these launches, and he thinks it's normal because watch SN9, SN8, and 9.
Oh, no.
He thinks it's normal for it to crash and explode at the end. That's just part of what's supposed to do. So when it landed, he looked at me. He was like, "No boom," like that. He's like, "Where's the boom?"
Where is
and then I said, "Hang on a minute," because I was watching a replay with him.
Yeah.
So I fast forward a bit, and he looked, and it exploded. And he goes, "Ah, boom!" Waiting for that. So that was very cool.
I don't think Elon's giving him the right impressions of how rockets should work.
Definitely,
that's true.
Well, so let's have a thank you for all that, Caroline. All that science content, that was amazing. So that was
thank you for
going through that.
Yep.
Let's roll on, and we'll have a brief segment on entertainment.
I don't know where you get your delusions, laser brain.
This is not what we came here to do.
No, but it's what I'm going to do. I have a plan. You've got a plan. I have part of a plan.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
So, Caroline, what has been entertaining you at the moment?
Okay, so I've been catching up on some movies on Netflix, and two that I really enjoyed. I watched one last night called The Merger. It's an Australian film, and it's about there's a football player. He's retired. He had an injury a while ago, and they're trying to set up a football team in this town. It's an outback town, and it's also a town where they're settling refugees from overseas.
Oh, cool.
And yep. Long story short is that he's trying to make a football team, because there is a football team already, but it's kind of like, we need, you know, your clubhouse is riddled with asbestos. We've got to rip it down. We haven't won any games for years. There's no support, you know. And then the football player, retired football player, comes up with the idea, well, we have heaps of refugees with lots of talents here, and they want to, you know, go welcome them into the community. And, you know, and so the star football player turns out to be one of these refugees, and he's able to kick really well. And then there is a bit of animosity between the locals who live in the town and, you know, the refugees. They're finding it hard to accept them. But the coach gets pairs them up and gets them to find out about each other and learn about each other. And then they end up becoming a really strong team through that. And then they end up also building a really strong football team, and they end up winning some games. And, you know, it's just really nice story. And, of course, on the side is a bit of a love story, and, you know, but it's like nothing that a family can't watch, except for a bit of Australian swearing and
of course.
It's just part of the way a lot of Australians speak anyway.
Caroline, so, now when you talk about football, football is this?
So I'm talking about AFL football.
Football. Yeah. Okay. Not good.
American football, not soccer.
Sorry. I didn't understand which way it is.
I'm talking about Australian rules AFL football.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So, I really enjoyed it, and my kids watch it with me. And I just said, ignore the swearing, and, you know, they ignored the swearing, but they enjoyed it as well. It's quite a heartwarming story in the end, because there is the issue of refugees here and being in detention camps and things. And this was just a story written about that and a town welcoming them. So, it was kind of a nice feel-good story, feel-good movie. I enjoyed that. If only it would be real and we would really, accept, let the refugees out and help them to integrate into Australia, that would be wonderful. So good example. The other film I watched was based on a true story. So it was about a singer from 1927. I've got his name now. But anyway, it was called The Green Book, the movie. So, it's about Donald Shirley, a performer, and Tony Lip Vallelonga. But he's a black performer in the United States, and he wanted to go on a tour around America, but down in the deep South, where he knew he was probably not going to be accepted too well. And he needed, a driver, but he decided he'd pick Italian-American, and who was quite well known for, let me say it this way, like, he was kind of like a bouncer at a club sort of thing, if there was trouble, he'd kind of deal with the trouble, so he was good at protecting people when they needed protecting. And good. They were two people from completely different worlds. The performer, he was kind of like really well educated. He was the prodigy. He was an amazing pianist and performer. And, the Italian American guy, Tony Lip, he was, just kind of not so cultured, just kind of really rough around the edges, But, he had a family and he needed to make money. And so, when Don Shirley invited him to go work for him, he's like, oh, I don't know. And then you know, eventually they, you know, he drove him around and he did have to protect him in certain circumstances. They, you know, there was a bit of trouble here and there. And they ended up getting along really well, getting to know each other really well and connecting. And in real life, they actually became really good lifelong friends. So that was a really nice film to watch. I highly recommend it. It was lovely. So the actors were Mahershala Ali, which I may have seen him around before, but he did such a wonderful job. And then Viggo Mortensen, you've never seen him like this before.
Aragorn.
Yeah. Aragorn, you have not seen. I didn't even realize it was him straight away. The accent, he changed his shape, like he's put on weight, he did it so well. Both of them acted so well, had such a great chemistry on the screen, and yeah, that's perfect. So I enjoyed that film as well. Yeah.
Cool. He didn't say at any stage, I would have gone with you into the very fires of Mordor. Nothing like
he
that.
He said it, but more of an Italian-American accent and different words. Different words. Yeah.
I don't know what that accent was. Though.
Different version. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not even going to try. But
no, I can't do American accents. Yeah. I'm walking here, whatever that is. Yeah, all right.
And what
you hear on TV, yeah.
The supporting actors were really good too. Linda Cardinelli's the wife of Tony Lip, who did a great job too, and all his family and the other musicians. Yeah, I just really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. Great suggestions. Thanks for those.
Yeah.
Lino, let's throw it over to you. So you've taken a break from watching Star Trek to watch a series called Superstore.
Yes. Yes. We'll take a bit of a break from Star Trek. We do watch it a bit late, and then Paul Bernadette's watching it, all of a sudden I look to my right and she's falling asleep. I go, oh, it's because of Star Trek or just because she's had a very very busy day?
But surely because she's tired. Yeah,
I first saw this ad on my Apple TV, making a Superstore. So I asked a guy at work, he said, oh dude, you gotta watch this. Okay, all right, no worries. Besides, so he goes to me, oh, it's on Netflix. I go, really? Cool. So I looked at Netflix, checked it out, watched the first episode. My wife and I just cooked. First one, done. It's a comedy, basically about a group of workers in a superstore. Like, just think of Big W and Kmart. So the superstore is called Cloud Nine. And they always say, it's so funny, have a heavenly day every time, it's all so good. So yeah, Caroline, you know that little chant they do.
Oh my gosh! Yes, I've been watching this as well. It's hilarious.
It's hilarious. It has the the characters and everything sort of remind me of another TV series called Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh yeah, I've seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Yes.
Yeah. So they have their own problems and things going around with them, and the manager, I can't remember his name. The manager, is it Brett?
Glenn.
Yeah. Glenn, that's right. Brett's the Asian looking guy who doesn't say anything, but he just does amazing things.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's funny.
It's hilarious. Glenn is a great manager. It's so funny. But the chant, like they do the chant before opening the store every morning. People are waiting outside, but the manager's like so excited about this chant. He's getting everybody like 9, 4, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Cloud nine. And everybody's like, about to walk away. And he's going, give me a seat. Give me an L. Like, oh, so it goes on for about 10 minutes.
10 minutes
before anyone's allowed to walk in the
hilarious.
Store.
I've heard of this series. I haven't seen it before. I'll have to check it out. Yeah.
There are some topics that you don't want children to hear, but on the whole, it's quite fun. You can just fast forward those things, but on the whole, it's really, really funny.
Every character, like Caroline said, every character has a unique way, and especially, I must admit, I'm so bad at remembering names. The guy in the wheelchair.
I can't remember any of the other characters. Just Glenn.
The guy in the wheelchair. Glenn's he's awesome. He's
the
awesome.
Best one. Yeah.
He's what, and Dina, that's the assistant supervisor. The guy in the wheelchair, he's so funny. He's got dry humor, if you know what I mean.
Right.
He's pretty straight to the point. I mean, you don't know if he's joking or he's serious.
and he just tells you, and you go, okay, he's joking. Sometimes he's serious. It's just the way the characters are. Yeah, if anyone wants to watch something that's just easy to, no, easy to watch, Superstore's the one. And there's other ones as well. I think this one, like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I'm not sure they're the same makers, but that if you want that sort of genre in comedy,
that genre, then, yeah.
So yeah, comedy, yeah, Superstore's, yeah, sort of Superstore's the one. And of course, if you go to Netflix and it tells you, oh, what was it called? Shows.
Oh, recommendations? To this. Yeah, yeah.
Recommendations? Yeah, yeah, there'll be a whole list, and a majority of them will probably be almost the same producers and directors. But, oh, yeah. Like Caroline and I said, Cloud Nine. Oh, it's so fun. Oh, and also, I can't wait for, guys, Space Force. I haven't heard anything.
Is there another one yet? There will be a second season.
I heard that they're doing a major revamp of the show because the first season was good, but it didn't get reviewed as well as people thought it might have been.
They have no taste. I loved it.
So I think they're revamping it a little bit.
I hope they don't change it too much. Goodness me.
Yeah. Anyway, that's, yeah, we'll see what
monkeys in space. Come on.
Come on. Oh, gosh.
It was just funny. It was like it's a comedy. Yeah. It's supposed to be funny. Yeah.
That's it. I'll just do mine briefly. So Disney Plus, they recently, because they had acquired Fox Studios and a couple of other film studios, whatever. They're going to own everything eventually one day. It'll just be Disney. they started now adding content in it. So you know how across the top they've got those different categories like Disney, Marvel, National Geographic, etc. So now they've added one called Star, I think it is, from memory. And this is basically it's basically a lot of the content from these other studios. But it's also content, you know, movies that wouldn't fit under the Disney genre. So if you think like the Alien trilogy, you know, Deadpool films like that. By the way, I haven't X-Files. Watched Deadpool. X-Files. Now, this is exciting because I haven't seen season 11 of X-Files.
You must watch it. You must watch it.
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And in fact, I wouldn't mind going through the whole series again.
Especially the one with Reese Derby in it. He's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to watch. So, I mean, just because those are there doesn't mean I'm going to be watching some of it. Like, I'm just not. I've seen what Deadpool's all about. And, like, well, I think the idea and the characterization is creative. Yeah. I just don't think I'm going to put myself there. Yeah. But aside from that, I'm such an old man. No, but but aside from that, the one thing I was happy about, though, was that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has now put the full library of their episodes, because before it was just the first season. And if anyone remembers the first season, it was actually pretty terrible until the last four or five episodes when the whole series changed. Before that, was like, oh my gosh, what are they, all these great characters and they're wasting them. But then from there, I remember it getting really good. I actually had seen the second season and really liked it, but then I stopped watching for two reasons. One, because they were putting it on late at night whenever they felt like.
Of a lot of shows they do, man.
And the only other way to watch it was to watch it online, and I hate trying to find websites that stream is like, whatever. So I thought one day I'll be able to see it. So anyway, the good thing is the full catalog is there. So I started from season one where it got good, just to remind myself what happened, and I'm going through season two now. And I'm really enjoying it. It's a great show. It's that whole kind of ensemble cast. Joss Whedon did the, I don't know when he stopped being involved, but he was involved for a while. And you can see that kind of talent that he has for bringing, you know, actors together as an ensemble. So he did this with Firefly. He did it with Buffy. He did it with Angel. All those series. That's kind of his talent of putting an ensemble cast together and then making sure that all the characters have interesting stories and arcs to go through, and also really good chemistry as well.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I'm really enjoying that. And the last thing I wanted to add is just an update on my beloved Harry Bosch, the cop show that I really enjoyed. So they finished filming the last season. So I'm watching now. I'm watching out for SBS in case they do their little thing again like last year. And it's supposed to be coming out in the US it's in the summer, so our winter, so in a few months from now. So I'm looking forward to that. And I was thinking, oh, after season six, what am I going to do? Like, there won't be any more Harry Bosch. Or season seven, what am I going to do? I just read last night that Michael Connelly, he's the author of the books that became the Harry Bosch series. He's heavily involved in the TV series as well.
Good, good.
That Amazon has picked up a spin-off for Harry Bosch, which will star Harry Bosch and another one of the characters. So they're going to continue it as a spin-off, which is interesting. Like, I'm just thinking, why don't they just keep making more episodes of Bosch with all the characters? However, there's hope on the horizon that we'll get some more Harry Bosch after this, and I hope it's just as good as the series, but I'm looking forward to season 7. Cool, and cool. I won't be ranting about it like I did last year when SBS pulled a swift one on me. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. That's not good.
No, not good. All right. So let's wrap it up there because this is another epically long episode. We don't plan for them to be this long.
We just talk too much.
We just got so much to get off our chest. Yeah. We like being with you as our listeners. That's our thing as well. We like sharing
that's
with
true.
You.
That's true. That's it.
All right. So we do want to thank you all for joining us for episode 51 of The Catholics of Oz. And always, before we go, we want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for The Catholics of Oz to continue. So today, we'd love to thank Ramon R., Matthew P., JV, Rachel N., and Paul B. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for The Catholics of Oz and all of the other shows on StarQuest to continue. So you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And now is a great time to become a StarQuest patron, thanks to a generous gift from a StarQuest supporter. When you start a new patron monthly pledge at sqpn.com/give, the first 3 months will be matched by an equal amount from our donor. So if you become a new patron at $10 per month, after 3 months, our donor will give $30 to StarQuest to support all of our shows, including this one. So making your gift go even further. If you've been thinking about becoming a StarQuest patron, now is a great time. Visit sqpn.com/give today. And also, we'd love to know your thoughts about today's episode. We talked about quite a bit. Vaccines, making dinner during Lent with love for the people around you. TV shows, quite a couple of things. So you can send us feedback by visiting sqpn.com/give, where you can also find our show notes for today's episode. You can also find us on SQPN's Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. And don't forget, we have our own Facebook page as well, a little Facebook community where we love to share things with you from time to time, facebook.com/CatholicsOfOz. All are welcome to come and join us in discussing our latest episodes or anything else. We can also be reached by email at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com, spelt O-Z. Don't forget the Oz is O-Z. Caroline, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. It was great. It was fun.
It was. And Lino, thanks as well for being on the show.
It's been awesome. The three amigos are back, people.
Yes. And thank you. It was good to have the three of us together. Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah. Giving the people what they want. That's all I want. Yeah. And once again, I'm Lindsay Sant. Thank you so much for listening to episode 51 of The Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.